5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experience publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
Well, good evening, one and all. It is the New Panic Room, episode 321. That's 321. That's kind of jolly, isn't it? And it is the 24th of August, 2023, 9:30 Central. I don't know why I do that beginning of the show, because, you know, if you don't know what date and time it is, then maybe you shouldn't be listening to the show. You should do something else. But it is Thursday yet again. It's only seemed like it was Thursday probably about a week ago, although the weeks seem to be getting shorter at the moment, which is scary. But and I have missed her. We don't get to speak much these days because we're so damn busy, but I'll bring her old Extina on. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm good. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of mood I'm in before the show. When I hear the banjos, I just get all jolly. I do. I'm like, yay.
It's jolly, yes.
We spoke about donkeys earlier today, and every time I drive by donkeys, and I drive by donkeys fairly often, I'll have you know. I want to take pictures every time just to send you. See, it's another donkey.
Of course you do. Who doesn't love donkeys?
Yeah, I know. They're so cute that I want one really bad. And the husband says I can't have one. And I think that's just really mean.
Well, boo. Boo on him. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Boo to him.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
who doesn't love donkeys? I do like donkeys. I do, but it's funny. If we've just been to a meeting at my daughter's school. She's in the FFA program, the farmers thing, and she's going to be raising.
Right.
I think she decided on a goat, so we're going to be buying a goat.
Aww.
So obviously not
I
to have
love
at home,
goats.
But I do
right.
too, but the sad thing is because you raise it and then show it and then it's off to market. And I've had a long and meaningful conversation with her about, are you sure you can do that? And she assures me she can, so we shall see.
Yeah.
So she's got, I think we've got to sign up for sure sort of Tuesday next week. There's another meeting to really think about it, but... yeah, we shall see. It'll be interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's good. She's going to have a good time, you know, part of the team and doing all of that. And it seems to be a subject dear to her heart. So, and she's not, you know, she's not unused to looking after animals. We have quite the menagerie here. So,
my gosh, yes. We had a Repticon last weekend, and I shocked that we didn't come home with anything. There was
nothing, I'm shocked you didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, especially because there was one moment where the husband's like, well, you know, we do have an extra tank or two in the house. So, you know, so in my mind, I'm like, oh, I know. But the only one, the only one like morph I would really love to have is a, and I think they're just beautiful. It's a Mojave Pied. They're just really cool. And if there had been one of those, just a little bit cheaper than they were, I think that we would have.
Are they the ones that are like $2,000 a piece or something?
Well, they're not anymore. They used to be, but they've come down, way down. Now they're about four, anywhere from like $350 to $400. And
well, that's not bad. That's
little,
not bad.
Yeah.
We paid
$250.
I think we paid $350 for our banana variant.
Kind of
white, but with like a yellowy stripe down the back. We paid that.
Yeah.
I know the last one we went to, and I don't go to them anymore because they had baby Gila monsters. They were only $4,000 a piece. And had I not been in the process of buying the house, I'd have probably ended up coming home with one. Because they are so freaking adorable. These things were, you know, probably about 4 or 5 inches long. They're only wee little babies, but they were so adorable.
You can't really handle them and like get them out and play with them or anything, can you?
They are actually venomous, but you know the venom teeth are actually at the back, so they've got to sort of chew on you a bit. But they're more to look at. They're more, they're like chameleons. I mean, I always wanted a chameleon, but they're very delicate. Yeah. You know, you can't get one out, and like you said with your snakes and whatever, you can't get them out and handle them because they sort of stress out and die. And I'd hate to spend $4,000 on a lizard to have it die. You know, that would
be a bummer.
That would be very upsetting. Yes, it would. But so anyhow, speaking enough of lizard talk. As I say, I'm assuming there's some sort of show going on this evening. Unless I'm wrong. I could be wrong.
Yes.
I could be just us two talking, you know. We should be fine.
Yeah, you know what, we don't... Yeah, because I was going to be gone next week, I didn't plan a show. So, I mean, we can always just hop on and just shoot the shit. But if not, we can just go to bed early, and that would be okay, too.
Oh,
so we can decide on that later.
Yes,
but
we can.
I'm excited tonight. We have two guests on that have never been on before, and I think that's cool because it's kind of like fresh meat, you know?
They are virgins.
So that's
we have two virgins for the slaughter, which is phenomenal.
So,
what we need to do is when we have new people on, we need to get some sort of demonic, satanic ritual sort of music going. That'll be great, you know.
I like it. Yes, we should look into that. But yeah, I'm really, really excited. We have two horror authors on the show this evening. We have There it is. We have Carl first on, and then later on the show we'll have, you know, I'm doing this all backwards. I think the first guest is Garrett Cook, and then later on in the show we'll have Carl.
Carl first is on second. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Easy for yourself, do you? You do not. My goodness,
first
me. What are
second.
You like?
Yeah, that's
what's that about?
Great. I love it. We should do that little, you know, baseball thing you got later. Yeah.
Maybe we should. Yes. I think without further ado, drag one of them out of the green room.
Right. All right. Our first guest of the evening, we have horror author Garrett Cook. Woo!
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. Just finished rereading Jack Ketchum's The Girl Next Door for a book club, and it was
a great experience,
great way to spend an afternoon.
What a book. It's been a couple of years since I read that. It's one of those that sticks in your head, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How many times have you read that now?
This would be the third.
Mm-hmm.
It's possibly it's one of my favorite horror novels of all time, but you don't need to read it all the time, I think.
Yeah. I presume you've seen the movie as well, yeah?
Yeah. The movie felt in some ways comparatively milquetoast, but it was still as honest as it could be with that material.
Yes, I thought they did very well. I thought they did, but you could see, yeah, they couldn't have gone full on like they did with the book. And I think even more horrific because it is actually based on a true story.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, great choice for the book club, I say.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've been wanting to just get a sample of everything that horror looks like, starting with, like, we started in with Dracula, then moved on to Hailee Piper, and then are just, like, we're just kind of all over the place. But, yeah, I love me some Jack Ketchum.
Yeah, a big, big fan of Jack, yeah.
It's awful. I was corresponding with him, and he was going to be on the show, and
I know I think we were one of the last to publish him. We published him in our charity anthology again many, many years ago, and he was in that. And I think shortly after that he passed away. Sadly, I think he was a big shock to most of the horror community. He kept it quiet. He was sick, and then he was gone, and that was a big loss to the horror world, really. But he's left behind one hell of a legacy, I have to say.
Oh, absolutely. I think he taught us so much about how horror can be about empathy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how you can't really have horror without empathy and without having just a big cosmology of people that you want to understand. And I think he was an absolute master of that and brought that down through a generation of horror writers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And he was more about, the psychological stuff, you know? I mean, some of it was very visceral and very brutal, but again, I don't think anybody would be quite like him for getting into, you know, getting into your mind, getting into your brain. I remember reading, I think the first thing I read of Jack was, he's got a collection of short stories, and there's some stories in there. One stuck in my mind about a young boy who was, his mum caught him basically catching and torturing animals. And again, I don't want to spoil it for anybody who reads it, but that, again, stuck in my head. You know, so yeah, there's a lot that he's done that's not going to go away. it's going to be with me forever.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which is the sign of a damn good writer.
Mm-hmm. So, Garrett, you're here tonight to talk to us about your book, Charcoal. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, the elevator pitch, and this is what my publisher could come up with, and I'm really glad they were able to because I'm bad at it, is Hellraiser meets The Picture of Dorian Gray.
Interesting. I like that.
I like that,
and it's,
yeah.
Basically, it's the story of an art student, a young black art student, who gets access to a set of charcoals that were actually made with the ashes of this wicked, decadent, insane Victorian painter. A guy who, like, just tortured someone at one point to get the right expression from them, for example.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
That's kind
of
cool.
And it's
cool.
The story of,
<It is.
laughs> of possession and cleaning up of possession and what our legacy looks like and just kind of the artist's responsibilities and the struggle of artists to own their shit as well as the power of privilege. A lot of it was written during the Black Lives Matter stuff happening in Portland, and I felt like I really wanted to lean in on the social justice aspects of the book, and that's where I took it. I wrote something that's simultaneously a splatterpunk Faust story and an indictment of just both white privilege and the way we treat artists and make them immune to their legacies.
Fascinating. I definitely want to hear more. I think we have a you're going to read for us an excerpt.
Yes, I am. This is so embarrassing. I don't have a copy of Charcoal on hand. Hold on a second.
Wow. No, I feel that. I do happen to have copies of my books, like, you know, in the two or three different spots around my house, but, you know, yeah, I definitely understand.
I keep giving mine away. You know, I have them, and I'll order some up, and then, you know, somebody will, I'll send one out, or I'll meet someone, and I'll always take in my book, and somebody will sign, and then,
yeah.
I don't have one of my, I've got bookshelves all around the house. I don't have any of my books. I've got some of the old copies from when they were published with previous publishers, but I'm not going to part with those because they're never going to be. Well, exactly. They can never be replicated because we've all got different covers and everything now. So I don't part with those.
Right.
I'm always
but the damn book. I thought I would have a copy of my book on me, but my my total despite for inventory and squirming at things with my name on them has bitten me in the ass, but now I have one.
Yay!
we can take that out in post production. You're okay.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
He says that every time.
I do. I never do, to be honest. I'm terrible.
It makes it more real, more fun this way, you know.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, do you need to set up the excerpt at all or just go right into it?
Let's go right into it, I think.
Okay, sounds good.
Oh. Okay, I've dropped my phone. All right. This is, the protagonist is just sitting at a bar.
Okay.
Shannon ordered a PBR, backed it with a shot of well whiskey. Rem did the same. They silently nursed their beers a bit until they were down low enough to pour the back in. Shannon said nothing more until she gulped down the first swig of Boilermaker and let it loose and it was on her senses. It wasn't going to be her last drink, but she was happy she was drinking. She felt safe knowing she was drinking. "I'm glad you're getting out," said Rem. "Thanks." Shannon's ears perked up. Something was whispering. "We will peck and we will shred. We will find it and descend like night upon the earth. We will rend, we will tear, we will gulp it down. Then gone. It will be gone. We are waiting. We can smell it. We are hungry. The murder is perched and waiting. We need to be born. We can tear it up and gulp it down, and then you can be free of it. Just listen to us and let us come out, and you can be okay, and you can say what you need to say and be free of the weight of it all. We have so much to give you, and you have so much to feed us. If you would please let us be born." She did not need to respond. She could tell the voices knew her heart. She zoned out to a far-off cawing until Rem brought her back to reality. "What have you been up to? I see you in class and you're quiet. Are you working on stuff?" The professor had looked at the work. He was liking the stuff in charcoal, though her eyes kept creeping down her shirt and up her skirt. He kept on drawing closer and closer, claiming more of her space. She cringed, pushed back, retreated in, stuttered some. And he tells her that to make it, she'll need to be more assertive, which she could be if he wasn't looking at her like that. She apologizes, though she does not know for what. He offers her a chance to work with the Libertines' charcoals. She would like to, but can't bring herself to say that. She thanks him, and says she wants to do a few more things before handling something so precious. He offers out there when she's ready. She cringes at the idea of being ready. Some stuff in charcoal. Rim put a hand on their chin. Interesting. Yeah, cool. Maybe something good came of that shit show in class. Shannon smiled. Yeah, I like working with them. They enjoyed a few more drinks. They remembered that they knew and cared for each other again. Shannon let her hand touch Rem's. She could have kissed Rem, but didn't know if she wanted to kiss anyone anymore. Maybe not for a while. A hand in hers was nice. And that's just a short excerpt.
Awesome. Awesome. It definitely leaves you wanting more and to know what's going to happen here. So good job. Great job. I when you were talking about the book and you were saying that it, you know, goes into demonic possession and stuff like that, and got to say that's one of the genres that just subgenres that really scare me. I do wonder a lot. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think for some people who maybe didn't, you know, I don't know, it isn't as scary for some people, but it's definitely always been one of the worst for me, I think, that can get under my skin and just freak me out. And so being that you're writing about the topic, is it something that unnerves you, that scares you?
Well, for me, the demonic possession narrative is as intertwined with mental illness as it was historically. I'm a person who's lived with complex PTSD and various neurological things. And, yeah, possession scares me because it represents the lack of agency, and it represents having to trust a part of you that is not good at interacting with the rest of the world, a part of you that doesn't care who you are, or, you know, or what you accomplish or how you go about your day. It's a part of you that doesn't give a fuck. It's a part of you that only wants to hurt you or hurt itself. And that experience, the experience of living with just trauma and depression and stuff, is so akin to the possession experience that I've been just entranced by those narratives ever since I could witness them, because they were a way of understanding what was happening in my own brain and in the mind of my grandfather, who was very, very bipolar. And so with those narratives, I had a way of contextualizing and comprehending the force of mental illness and what it exerts upon the personality and the self.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that another subgenre in the horror is definitely mental illness, any kind of, you know, psychological things and mental illness, because the things that your brain can make you think is just, it's terrifying. It really is terrifying. I've had mental illness in my family, and you know, so I have experienced it through, you know, family members and things, and it could be, you know, even scarier than demonic possession or something, because how do you even differentiate between what's real and what's not? You know, this is awful, but go ahead.
That's a big part of charcoal. It's not like is it all a dream kind of way. It's showing you the world through a cognition that is being eaten away at. Like the character loses time. The character remembers events differently and finds them get revised and such. It's written in a language and a context of mental illness, which does, like, you know, warp our cosmologies and change what life looks like and colors it in various different ways.
Yeah. It's definitely a very deep topic, I think. It couldn't have been. Yeah, I guess I wonder for you writing this, was it Oh, depression isn't the word I want to use, but did it feel very heavy tackling a subject matter like this?
Oh, for sure. This book took me 4 years.
Wow. Yeah.
That was never, you know, the time frame I thought I would spend on it, and it wasn't the time frame my other works were at, because I was in the Bizarro community. And when you're writing Bizarro stuff, like, you learn how to write a fun novella in 3 days. You learn how to just, like, you learn how to crank stuff out. And you don't necessarily learn to sit and chisel and really just find the story inside this monolith of a thing. That's not really how Bizarro Publishing worked. But this one, it was longer, and it was heavier, and it was much more involved. There were days I would write, like, 10 words on it, and I would feel like,
wow,
this is what I should do today. And by the end of it, I came up with something that was better than anything I'd done yet, and at the same time, like, there was a lot of me spilled out into that, and some of it hasn't quite come back, even in a couple of years since finishing it up.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask next. What have you done since then? What kind of, have you gone back to Bizarro, or is it now you're reaching for more?
I'm doing some literary horror stuff at the same time as some extreme horror stuff and a sci-fi horror novel that's more literary. And I'm working on just, you know, doing what I want. My hero in publishing is Joe Lansdale, and, like,
good company.
I want to be able to move around as easily as he is.
So Joey's probably one of the most versatile horror writers around at the moment. Have you ever met Joe?
I would say one of the most versatile writers on Earth.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Have you? I met him a couple of years ago, dinner with him, and he's such a fascinating guy. We need to get him on the show.
Yeah,
I actually spoke to him about coming on the show, and then sort of, you know, life sort of got in the way. So I we need to get him on the show, actually, because
the problem with
Joe is, you know, you get him off on the top, and off he goes. You know, it's just, we could just do a whole show with Joe, which is great, you know. But yeah, I mean, you look at the stuff that he's done, that he's still doing, and he churns out, and it's always good stuff, whether it's Happen Leonard or Bubba Hotep is one of my favorite films of all time.
I have to say.
What a great, eclectic, you know, bizarre movie. It really is. But it's one of those, like, on paper. I remember somebody said, you've got to see Bubba Hotep before you even knew who Joe Lansdale was. And I looked at the book, and I thought, this is no. There's no way this is going to work. And it does. Somehow, it works. And he's got the whole Elvis thing going on, and they're in this home. And it's just the Egyptian guy. It's just like, how does this work? But he manages to make it work, which is phenomenal.
He's amazing at, like, dignifying any person or object with a reply.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's so capable of, for example, he writes a story like Bob the Dinosaur Goes to Disneyland. And it's one of the best Bizarro pieces ever written. And it's from the perspective of an inflatable toy dinosaur that really wants to go to Disneyland.
Yeah.
But you feel the urgency, you feel the emotional connection, and you understand his deep understanding of this inflatable toy dinosaur. This inflatable toy dinosaur is a being, like, as thoroughly understood as any character anyone wrote. And so he's so capable of that. He's so capable of dealing in alien consciousnesses and alien modes of narrative, and it's wonderful.
There's probably only Joe Lansdale could have written that story, to be honest.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I couldn't imagine anybody else writing that and making it work, you know. So,
he's actually the only steampunk author I read.
Yeah?
His Ned the Seal books are just so fascinating. Just like, But yeah, just that kind of versatility is the thing I envied and I want to be able to get at some point. To just like know that if I'm curious about something, I can follow it to its terminus and I can create the thing and there will be a home for it.
Yes.
That's what I want to aim for.
There are worse things to aim for, you know, if we could, I like you say, I'm like, I envy his versatility. I mean, I write, when I write my stuff, it is horror. And I consider myself reasonably versatile, but since we've professionally ghostwriting, you know, I do get to write in other genres as well. But I wouldn't
consider
myself.
That's a great experience. I've really enjoyed ghostwriting.
Yeah, it's good because it means you can, because you have to, you know,
the constraint is fun.
If a client wants a romance, you've got to write a romance, you know, and I've had some pretty challenging projects, all of which I've taken head on and managed to make them work. And there's been a couple, I mean, you probably had the same, you know, that you're given the brief and you think, I can't do this, you know, what do I do? Where do I start? I mean, for example, I wrote Church of Latter-day Saints young adult romance, believe it or not. Where the heck do I start with this? But you start with the research, you know, and I spoke to the client, and because he was actually Mormon, I learned a hell of a lot about the Mormons, actually. Did my research, a bit of history, you know, the background and all the rest of it, and then it was just a nice sort of teen romance, but you couldn't have certainly couldn't have kissing, you couldn't have a holding hands, you know, they couldn't even be in the same room alone together.
Oh yeah, adult romance is also insanely constrictive. It feels like the things Nashville lays out for how to write a country album, like that constricted.
Yes. Right. Yeah, very much. But it was a great challenge because normally when I write, and again, anybody who's read my stuff will tell you, I don't hold back. You know, if it's a sex scene, it's sexy. If it's a horror scene, it's horrific, because that's how I write, you know. But having to portray the same emotions and the same thing, but in a certain way, was difficult. It really was hard, I have to say.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge.
Yes,
even just editing something completely alien is just a fun and is sometimes a fun and intellectual challenge.
But. Yeah, me too. I mean, it is like you say, it is great experience because you learn, you know. I mean, every word we write, we are learning. I don't think we, as writers, we ever stop learning. And I think if I ever stop learning, it would become boring. You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good part of it, but So again, like you say, versatility is definitely the name of the game.
So, Garrett, what are you working on now?
I am working on a femboy werewolf torture porn escape thing, sort of.
Nice. Nice. I like that.
basically,
that's right on my street.
A femboy werewolf is imprisoned by the most toxic daddy dom vampire possible, who brings them home because they're looking for a place to stay.
Of course he is.
And they
I have to ask, what was the inspiration behind that?
Well, honestly, it's just like seeing how queer sexuality looks on the page a lot of time and in cultural consensus, as opposed to examining it how you examine it firsthand and through just and through the experiences of people around you in that community. And I felt like it'd just be really cool to have a very atypical kink-centric monster story that is nonetheless about, like, about those boundaries, about the exploitation, that the good and the bad that people encounter and the complications of kink.
We are definitely going to need to get you back on the show when you finish that one, and you definitely have to bring a really good excerpt because I want to hear some of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how much of it I can read most places. That's for damn sure.
No, we like steam. We like steam. You can read anything.
We don't enjoy our steamy excerpts on this show.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Garrett, we're just about out of time for our first segment. Before we let you go, let us know where we can find you online.
I am absolutely ubiquitous on Facebook. I am on Twitter. I have made 3 TikTok videos, and I might make more. But mostly on Facebook.
Awesome. All right. For all of our listeners out there, go out and find Charcoal by Garrett Cook. And, we can't wait to have you back on the show again. Thank you so much for coming on.
You've got to promise to come back with the werewolf thing. I really...
Oh,
I really
absolutely.
Want to know more
about
that.
It's
about
a month
when it's done.
So.
Brilliant. You let us know. We will have you back on with that because I want to hear more about that one.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Thank you, Garrett.
Thank you.
Thank you. Speak to you again. Bye-bye. That's brilliant. I what a great guy. It's always nice, to listen to speak to a fellow Joe Lansdale fan as well. Obviously, Texas author, in Texas terms, practically a neighbor. I think he's probably about 200 miles away from my house, but in Texas, that's just down the street, let's. It is break. So time to hear from our sponsors, and we will be right back after this.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Now Welcome back to part two of The New Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, he is back. Excellent. You know, I haven't heard that song for a long time. Obviously, very, very big in the 80s. Yeah. Funny story. Obviously, the band, the Liverpudlian band, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, obviously. I still have the album, funnily enough. Big wow. Full album, Welcome to Pleasure Dome, which the track in itself was pretty damn good. But it was, I mean, it shot through the charts in England. It was number one. It was number one for a good few weeks before. They played it on the pop shows and all the rest, on the kids' TV, Saturday morning shows, before somebody realised what it was about. And it's about gay sex. And you listen, to be fair, you've got to be pretty, but you listen to the lyrics. You know, it's so obvious. It's like, who didn't figure that out? I mean, it's a great tune, great, great tune, great club tune. And they were obviously very big on the gay scene, but... it's the same as YMCA, yeah, by the Village People. Yeah. Oh, look, great disco song, da, 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 you know, all the rest of it. And then you do realise what that's about, don't you? Yes, well, stayed at the YMCA. Yeah, think about it. Oh, and then they brought out In the Navy, which is just as bad, but well, just in a good way. Great, great tunes. I have the album. The album's Go West, if you want to look it up. And there's some great, great tunes on. They were brilliant. I love the Village People. There you go. Good music is good. It was just funny that it took them so long to realise. You know, and then, yeah, then they banned it. Then they banned it from, it got taken off the air playlist and everything. It's like, well, everyone's heard it now. It'd been out months, you know. It was like slipping down the charts when they banned it. Well, and then because they banned it, then it started climbing again.
Musicians have been doing that kind of stuff, and you know, for ages, and it's only now I think that they just, well, you know, I can't totally say that because we had what was that band and the group when I was younger, Two Live Crew with Musa Horny. I mean, that was just you didn't have to wonder what that was about. It was right there because I was just going to bring some and say, what is that? Is that Cardi B who's got that WAP or WAP or whatever?
Oh,
called,
well,
you know?
Well, that's just not even subtle, is it? It's just, you
no,
might
it's
should
all,
as well just call
no.
it, you know, my vagina. You know, I mean, it's just not subtle. So and to be, and again, it gained popularity because. You know, it wasn't a particularly good song. It's like, was it Nicki Minaj did Anaconda? And it was just, okay, it's about bums and willies, you know, and it's yawn. You know, let's try and be inventive. But, you know, they shoot a suggestive video and the lyrics are a bit naughty. And it to be fair, it appeals to sort of kids like my daughter's age because it's a bit naughty, it's a bit subversive. And pop music has been doing that since pop music. I mean, I remember... You know, we've all seen the movies and seen the documentary. But Elvis, when Elvis was out, when Bill Haley and his Comets did Rock Around the Clock, there was uproar because it was seen to be black music. It was seen to be devil's music. It was, you know, that was the, I guess, Frankie Goes to Hollywood of its day. Or the Cardi B of its day, funnily enough. And I think each generation has had that. But I think the problem now is a lot of it is just getting homogenized and watered down. And there's going to be the odd one that causes a bit of controversy. And it's created for controversy's sake because that's what sells records or downloads as it is now. But it's everything's, you know, with AI and all the rest of it, it's just... We're just going to be a beige society with beige music and beige art and beige books and beige movies. And it's depressing.
It really is. It really is.
Anybody wondering what the background noise is? It's one of my dogs decided to chew on a chew toy right by my feet. But I'm not going to stop her because it's her house as well. So there. So anyway, it is... I'm going to confess, it is my favourite time of the evening. It really is.
Welcome And now, it's time for another book review.
It's the lovely Samantha. I still,
hey,
you know,
guys.
I'm sorry. We still haven't got the studio audience cheering for that. I need to bring them on for that, because you deserve a good cheer. You really do, because you are lovely. You are lovely.
And how are you guys tonight?
Well, we're good. I'm going to do another one actually with the Jaws theme tune for in the next week or two. That'll be fun too. Obviously, like Stina's, she's over the hill now with the whole school thing, but I'm not, and I know you're not. Just getting back into the back to school. I've been at a school meeting for my daughter's doing the agricultural thing this year. I didn't get home till sort of 10 minutes before the show, actually. Wolfed down my McDonald's, and I was on the air, obviously. But how are you finding the back to school thing, Samantha? You getting into the swing of it now?
No, I hate it. I'm drowning.
It is dreadful. Awful. Can't wait for Christmas.
This is not a good time.
So on that note, I dread to ask. What have you got for us this evening? Better be a good one.
So I decided that we should revisit one of my favorite ones from Hellbound, which is your story, Flanagan. Because I don't ever see it spoken about. I love it, and nobody ever mentions it. Like, I scroll through TikTok all day long, and like Facebook, I'm even on Instagram. You know, nobody ever talks about this one. I can't figure it out, because I consider it extreme, but nobody ever is like, "Oh, this is an extreme novel," and I really think that it is.
Well, yeah, it is a bit. Yeah, that was the idea.
It's my favorite. The ending, I think, is the best part, because that's really shocking. That's not what I was expecting. It's really not. And it starts off like so simple. You just have these teachers. They're going to go on spring break. They're going to get away from the kids. I would love to do this. And then this hotel that they stay at really is like, it's their downfall. They should have chosen another hotel. And this would be my life. I would go get away from my kids, and then I would get slaughtered because I chose the wrong hotel.
I know about feeling.
And you finally sent me this as a signed copy, so it sits on my Hellbound shelf. I gave myself a Hellbound shelf, so it sits up there beside
Christina.
Everyone
needs one.
There you go. Xtina's got a Hellbound bookcase. I mean, she's got a whole bookcase.
And it's got so many books
does.
On
it's
it.
It's bad.
It's gonna collapse one of these days, but it'll be, it'll be fun.
I picture you in the middle of dinner or something cooking, and then like the whole thing collapsing, and you just continuing on. Like, will it last longer than I thought that it would?
Yes. That's pretty much probably what's going to happen. I even have, like, I think the bottom of the shelf is, like, three, deep and everything. And I just keep adding more to it because, I don't really have room for another shelf. So I just have to make
this
one work.
Well, I'll tell you what we need to do, Xtina, is when your shelf can take no more, we'll just have to pack in. We'll just stop publishing books.
Gosh.
We're done now.
That's
because Xtina's bookcase is full. A bookcase is full. So I'm sorry, guys. No more brilliant anthologies. No more fantastic novels. We're done now. This is it. It's all you're going to get.
Oh,
so there you go. Problem solved.
I don't like that solution. I was going to say. We don't
talk
about this stuff enough.
Looking at the books and anthologies that's going to be coming out between now and Christmas it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot. There's a whole chunk coming through the system. We've got another Blake Rudman is going to be out next month.
He's
fifth one is out last. Absolutely, yeah, good stuff. And then we've got a whole bunch of terrific anthologies. We've got some fantastic novels by, you know, first-time authors for us. We've got, in fact, next month I'm excited. We have the new, the Paul Kane trilogy for the first time together in one volume, the Red Trilogy. It's werewolves, as we said in the first segment. I love my werewolves. So, yeah, we've got a lot of great stuff going. See, people don't realize, you know, the stuff that goes on behind the scenes here is just, yeah, it is.
Xtina wants to add that we also have three poetry books coming out before the end of the year.
We do.
And James says, no more poetry. And then we have three this year.
She sneaks them by me when I'm not looking.
We have Beautiful Tragedies 3 that I'm so excited about. Poets, yes. And it's just about ready to go to the contributors for page proofs and stuff, so I'm excited about that. And and I wanted to say, if anybody has a copy of the original Beautiful Tragedies, I was not happy with the interior. I just was not happy with it, and I went in and I made it all pretty, and it's now it looks so good, and I'm so happy when I got the print copy of it. I'm like, oh my god, this is what it should have looked like before. I mean, it was
one of our earlier volumes. I mean, that was back in the day, and we were just saying before the show came on, you know, we've learned so much. And we get looking back at some of the early titles. At some point, if I ever get time, you know, we should revisit them and just give them a bit of a tidy up, modern, bring them up to date a little bit. But with that, busy bringing out new stuff.
Right.
Going back is plus as well, it shows the evolution. I cheated a bit with my books. I mean, Flanagan was one of my first ones. I think it was the second one published after Colton Forche. And I did actually go back a couple of years ago, got the covers redrawn, because they were all out with different publishers, and we brought them all within Hellbound. Give them all another good edit and a good tidy up and new covers and everything, and whole new lease of life. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Flanagan really needs more love out there. We need to have a bit more of a big push on Flanagan, because I think it's probably one of my favourites of mine anyway, because it's just, and then the twist, you know, again, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. The twist, and it is, but it's actually rooted in fact, funnily enough, from personal experience. It's a twist that you would never see coming, ever.
Wow. Now I have
plus,
to read it.
there is a scene in there. It's like a flashback to an experience one of the characters had in Amsterdam. That actually happened to me. That is actually based. That is fact. That is almost verbatim an experience I had. So there you go. A little bit of me in that.
Not me going to Flanagan to reread it again.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Samantha. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. And
Yes, you too.
Yeah, thank you. And I can't wait to hear what you have for us next week.
Yes, I will see you guys next week. Enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, and you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Oh, it's always nice. She's so lovely. It's always nice when she does one of my books. They don't get enough love, to say. You know, we spend that much time promoting other people's books and all the rest of it. Sometimes I forget about them, because some of them, they've been out a little while now. It's been a while since I wrote them, and I just need to bring them to the front a little bit more. You know, we're starting to look at some of our older titles, and now we've become more of a name. You know, just bring them back to the top of the pile and get them out there, you know? So,
Speaking of that, I wanted to say I was very excited because my books are now on the shelf at the public library. And when I went to look and get a picture with them, four of the titles had already been checked out. So I was
That's fantastic. Congratulations. I love that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
We need to get your library to have a Hellbound Books section.
Yes, yes. I'm gonna work on that because that would be amazing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So but yeah.
Well,
we can certainly
provide some books for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the whole day after I saw my books, you know, at the library, I just felt like it was my birthday. And I was shocked when everybody wasn't like blowing the little whee or, you know, whatever they. I was like, you know, I just wanted everybody to celebrate with me, and nobody was. So.
It was you post them on Facebook, sent the pictures out. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Great to see the books out. I always get a kick of seeing our books out there, which is fantastic. So
definitely.
Well done. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
So, I think you need to introduce our second guest of the evening, who is first.
That's right.
Not going to let that one go. You know that, don't you?
Oh, gosh. Our next guest of the evening, so I said next since a second. We have horror author Carl First.
Hello.
Hey,
how are you doing? Yes, we can.
Really
can you hear me?
Doing really good. Glad to be out of that green room. I was getting a little stuffy in there. Yeah.
Well, it's all the M&Ms and the puppies that sort of clutter it up a little bit. So I'm glad to have sprung you out of that.
Yeah, full of cocaine. Yeah.
I thought I snorted all that. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
Oh,
it's all right.
Gosh.
I found a use for it. Yeah. What's going on, guys?
Good for you. Say again.
Oh, it's.
What's going on?
Yeah.
It's been.
It's Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Thursday. It's very much Thursday. Yes.
Yeah.
It was great listening to Garrett. Fan of his for a long time. And funny you brought up not having a copy of his book because shortly before I dialed up, I realized that I just gave away my last copy of Fallen Crystal Palace this morning to a colleague. Hard time with inventory.
Yes.
It happens. You know, I think it happens to all of us. You know, I get to where I'm like, okay, I think I have a good stash of my books. And then, you know, you give one out here, you give one out there, and then you're like, shit. Yeah, it happens to me too.
I think we all do. And it's like, what we need to do is friends and that, want one, is make them pay for it. You know, don't give him a book. Give him the website link. You want a book? Go bloody well buy one. You know, I'll sign it for you for an extra $5. I'll sign it for you, mate. Not a problem. Yeah, I got kids to feed here. I'm not giving stuff away.
We got to remember that. Yeah.
Mm.
But no, it's Thursday night, and my brain always says this is the end of the work week, and then I'm like, damn it, it's not. I still have a whole another day, and so I think it messes me up. So I'm like, this is it. I'm tired. I'm going to sleep for the weekend, and it's I got a whole another day. So, woo! But we're here. So, Carl, you're here to talk to us about the folly. And did I say your name right? Is it First? Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Perfect.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. James had a fun time, joking with us. We had First, not second. So
that may have come up before in my life. Yeah. But
yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah.
But you're here to talk to us about your book, The Falling Crystal Palace. I love the tagline.
Yeah,
I don't want to say it's a life or death situation, but I want to say it's a life or death situation. That's great. So tell us a little bit about it.
Falling Crystal Palace is a little bit noir, a little bit surrealism, a little bit bizarro. It happens in a place called Sterling, Indiana, where the primary problem people there face is they have a hard time remembering who they are. So there's identity investigation or identity verification agents to help them out a little bit. And one of them is named Tori. And she's not that doing that great because some of the stuff that she helps solve is happening to her. So she gets a message from a friend of hers who had disappeared about 40 years before. 45 years? It's on her 60th birthday. So she begins a quest to track down her former childhood best friend, Hoppy. That quest takes her to an infinite water park where they both have to work together to maybe escape. That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Yeah, you know, we love to ask our guests what is the inspiration behind the novel, and, you know, this is a great one. I would love to hear this story.
Well, you know, I there's influences. You know, I'm a big reader, I've always devoured Weird Lit and things like Murakami and, you know, Borges and things like that. But, like, you know, there's a specific sort of seed for the book, and the thing took me over 10 years to write. I'm a very slow writer, but about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer at this point, I was at a wedding in the Wisconsin Dells, if you know, that's the water park capital of the world. And this wedding happened to be taking place at one of the more destitute, decrepit water parks that was sort of being abandoned, but it was quite huge. And it was a wedding, so I imbibed a lot, you know. So I woke up in the middle of the night next to my spouse, Annie, with raging heartburn. And so I busted out of the room looking for some Tums, because sometimes it's in a vending machine. And I got really lost. And this hall is just going on and on in this eerie, like, unbroken repetition of rooms and carpet and no sign of human existence. And I got to this section where all the doors were cracked open. I guess to give the maids access, like easy access, but it was just this really bizarre experience. And, you know, I really, like, right then and there, I knew I wanted to write a story about a character in that kind of situation. So that's kind of where it started. And then you know, over time, I incorporated a lot of different sort of influences. Yeah.
I like that. And I think we have is the excerpt, is it from the book?
The excerpt's from my other project that I'd love to talk about too.
Yes, of course. Yeah. We're all yours.
Yeah. So Fallen Crystal Palace came out end of last February or March 1st, sometime around there last year, 2023, but, you know, last spring. More recently we've launched the Deadfall Wisconsin podcast, which is a horror comedy podcast. It's DIY from the ground up, and I'm really, really proud of it. We did, you know, obviously all the scripts, all the acting, all the music. It's got, you know, we're lucky enough to have someone who could do some professional sound editing. So we were able to put this thing together from scratch, and it turned out really great. It's sort of like Evil Dead meets Lovecraft meets Three Stooges. You know, the excerpt that I shared with you to share with the world today is a little bit from episode 6.5 of the Deadfall Wisconsin podcast. I don't know if you want me to give it a little context or not. I don't know how much it needs, but that's what we're going to hear.
All right. Yeah, I'm excited. Are we going to push the button, James?
Yeah, I can do, if you ask me nicely. Absolutely. Are we ready for the pushing of the button?
I think so.
Okay, I'm going to push the button then. Here we go.
Though my instructions were unspecific, the overall aim seems clear. The strange consortium wishes me to establish the church in Deadfall. When they visited our apartment, I attempted to explain to them without too much implication or revealing certain facts that would doubtless lead to the criminal persecution, that even as master teacher of the religion, it represents a system of belief that are less than sincere. I went as far as to admit that I fabricated the visions I claimed, that the messages from the void were simply a product of my own fancy. These gentlemen were undeterred. Trust that my efforts will not be in vain. Success is the key to our reunification, as immaterial as the dream feels right now. I live happily in such an opium dream, while the promise of your eerie touch once more awaits me, my sweet fishy bride. Members of this crew began falling ill even before we left sight of the shore, and in the following days, the pestilence spread. Some of these men seem to suffer with a kind of pneumonia. They hack and cough as if their bodies are trying to turn it inside out. Others are beset upon an endless quarrel of the gut. They line the rails and hatches, emptying themselves into the sea, and those who cannot force themselves among these ranks vomit directly onto the deck. We attempted to inquire after the ship's cook, a large foreigner called Bailey, apparently of Deadfall stock, but the inquiry led to nothing. The besieged crew have a perplexing deep love for all that this Bailey produces. I have wondered whether food preparation may have a role in the future of this church. Even more disturbing, a large number of the crew has begun behaving strangely. From what my sister and I observed, they seem to suffer from some kind of bizarre delusions. They ramble excitedly with deep, soulless confusion on their faces as if they no longer know who they are. We believe that some have taken to setting traps for one another at various locations of the ship. If this cacophony of illness and insanity wasn't enough, we are never privileged for more than a few hours without hearing the splash of another person as they fall overboard. Some of these we assume are suicides, some I believe are executions. It is only a matter of time before this disease takes its hold in Sister and I. Either that or this ship will become emptied of its crew and we will drift aimlessly until inevitably we sink. I know not how this letter will ever reach your hands, but I felt an impossible urge to reach out to you, my one true love, once more. There is so much I do regret about my life. I regret building it on a lie, lies to those who would follow my religion, lies to my sister, my mother, all of it. I suppose for most of my life I acted out of fear and guilt. I regret that I was not a better man. The one thing I do not regret of all of it is my love for you, dear Elsie. Despite the grimness of this report, I assure you that I cling to our plan. It is quite literally the last of my possessions, and it represents the last of my hopes. If the miraculous occurs and I do arrive at Deadfall's shores, only one last cruelty remains before we can be forever united. Even that, though, seems less of a cruelty than many of the things we've done. My dear sister's life has in many ways been nothing but a living death. Ushering her into the beyond may be seen, even by God, as an act of mercy. Maybe even the one good thing I've done. I remain eternally yours, Hector Scheitzman.
That was fascinating. That was, oh my gosh, that was
that.
So cool.
I like the sound. So who's your sound guy? Because obviously better than our sound guy, to be honest.
I think he's better than almost any sound guy. His name's Eric Stegbauer. I'm lucky enough to write with him and to be in a band with him. And for a little bit, I actually worked with him. His work is incredible. It brings that stuff to life. And what you heard there was the B-plot of Hector Scheitzman, a cult founder. And in the A-plot, we meet five fucking idiots who believe that they're investigative journalists investigating the cult of Hector Scheitzman in 2023 at the site of its founding. And they quickly find out or start to sense that that's not who they are, and they have to unravel that mystery. In the B-plot, we learn the story of Hector Scheitzman and the origin of his very bizarre cult.
That is too cool. I'm going to definitely have to tune in now. Yeah, you have to like give a plug where we can listen to this.
Yeah, you know, wherever you buy podcasts, I guess. You know, okay. Apple, Spotify, stuff like that, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just look up the Deadfall Wisconsin podcast. Is that the full title?
That's all it's called. Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
right, and yeah, I was going to say with your book, The Fallen Crystal Palace, when you make out the signed copy, that's XTINA.
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
Easy James jumps in right there and says how I'm shameless and stuff, and I don't disagree.
You know, I'm giving you a disappointed look from over the airwaves, I have to say. But I have to say there, Carl, I mean, it sounds like you have so much fun making that.
Yeah.
It was incredible. We started right before the pandemic began, and it was something that really pulled us through. There was really probably maybe, you know, me and Eric Stegbauer did the writing, but there's a few other people involved in brainstorming it sort of developing it. And, we started meeting, you know, because we had nothing else to do a couple hours a week. And, after about 3 or 4 years of, we wrote the thing and then we recorded it and we thought we were done. And then we realized that was us learning how to record it. You know what I mean? Cause it's hard doing a dramatic podcast. What we heard was one guy talking, but most of the scenes are, you know, have multiple people doing multiple things at the same time. So then we had to re-record the whole thing. And now it's, you know, the hottest thing in the world of podcasts.
Brilliant.
Cool.
Yeah.
Like
and I think the fact that you enjoy it does come through. It shines through.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
You know, when we were researching back in our early days of this show, I remember researching some, and I'm not going to name names and point fingers, but you know who you are. I listened to so many. It was like they'd just given up on life, you know. They were just doing it because they'd done it sort of every Tuesday afternoon for the last 40 years, and they felt that they just had to do that. And I said to Xtina, and I, you know, back in our early days, when this stops becoming fun, I'm going to stop doing it because what's the point? And here we are, you know, 321 shows later, and I still have a good time. Isn't that it's just...
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
And anybody who's ever known me in my entire life will tell you what how short my attention span. I get bored so quickly. you know, but here we are. But again, you know, Xtina books fantastic guests. We always have a great time. It's always fun. And I think as long as we can keep it fun, then, you know, people keep listening. Like I say, with your podcast, you know, you can tell you had great fun doing it and acting it out and doing the sound effects and all the rest of it. So good on you.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, James, it, like what we're here in the indie world, like it's absolutely different than someone trying to get an agent and land with the big five or something. Like we, you know, it's all about doing like what Garrett was saying earlier, like just doing what we want to do, and what comes out tends to be so much more genuine and you know, have a lot of value, and it's an honor to be part of that world, you know. I don't think.
Yeah, I don't.
Like,
we've said it's same as with the movie world. You know, the independent publishing is where all the good stuff is coming out now. You know, because with all due respect to the greats, you know, the big five, you know, the big publishers. You know, if you're not Stephen King or Dean Koontz or you know the big boys, they're really not that interested. But yet, you know, those indie publishers, you know, we'll take a chance. you know, we're not looking for the same. In fact, we actively look for something that's different. We will take a chance on something that's different. It doesn't hit every time, but when it does, it does. But we give voice to such phenomenal writers. You know, some great. We've met some great authors across the years who write for me in my book equally well, if not better, than a lot of the greats.
Yeah, yeah. It's great to see it thriving, and it's awesome that you're helping it thrive with this show and with Hellbound. That's a huge service. I'm all about just sort of making stuff, and especially making stuff with, you know, people who I love. Yeah. Like that's the best feeling in the world. And if it's a novel or if it's a podcast where it's making music, that feeling of the process, you know, is just such a vital feeling.
It's nice to work with other creative people. I find I get the biggest kick working with other creatives. You know, I worked in my previous careers. I never really had that. I went through the professional thing, thinking I wanted to go, you know, climb a corporate ladder and blah de blah de blah. And I've never been happier. You know, I don't earn anywhere near as much as I used to, and I certainly don't get, you know, the company cars that I used to have. But I'm so much happier because I'm surrounded by fellow creatives. And it's nice. It's nice to be able to talk writing with writers, you know, because not non-writer, non-creative people, they just don't understand it. You know, I always used to feel awkward talking about, you know, plots and characters and stuff like that with people. Now, you know, I can sit and chat all day about, you know, things we've got on the go and anything in the arena. So, yeah, it's great. It's a great, great bunch of people. Great bunch of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that note, I have to say we're just about out of time for a show. We've had a fun time with you, Carl. I know you have Carl. You have to promise to come back, and we'll have you on first.
Awesome.
I was waiting to do
that. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you having me.
And definitely, real fast before we say goodbye, let us know where we can find you online.
Yeah, well, I'm Carl with a C, and last name's first over at on Facebook. You can find me there. On Instagram, I managed our podcast Instagram account. So if you look for Deadfall Wisconsin on Instagram, I'm there. And that's about it. I have a Twitter account, but its days are numbered. That space is gotten unhealthy.
I was going to say ridiculous, but yeah, let's go with unhealthy.
Facebook, Instagram, I'm around.
Brilliant. Okay.
Brawler,
thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Listeners out there, go out and find The Falling Crystal Palace by Carl First and the Deadfall Wisconsin podcast. Thank you so much, Carl. We had a great time.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye. Speak to you again soon. Bye-bye. And a fellow podcaster as well, which is great. You know, it's funny. I've got some people at the moment doing their damnedest to persuade me to turn this into a visual thing. I don't think we will. I like it as a radio format. Yeah. I think it works great. I have a great face for radio, so that works too. But I'm going to do our final tune tonight. I've picked it out deliberately because I read a very upsetting article that Queen have removed this song from they're bringing out another greatest hits album, whatever, or from their greatest hits lineup. They removed it because for fear of offending people. Which is a sad day. And I would like to say, anybody listening, if you are offended by this last song, we could not care fucking less. So on that note, it is time to say good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Oh, you're gonna take me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. matter.